Lakuta Sichas Chelakov Beis, Parsha Emer, Sicha Gimel, a summary of the Sicha. In this week's Parsha, we have the mitzvah of the Dalad Minim, the four species. So the Torah lists the four species, giving certain identifiers about how to know which of the four species, what they are. So it calls the Esrig the Pri Eitz Hodor, the fruit of a tree, which is beautiful. Kapis Tmarim, which is the afron, which means the lulav, the branch of a palm, of a date palm. Anaf Eitz Obeis, a branch of which the leaves are tightly bound around the branch. And Arve Nochal, the willows of the stream. So we find something very interesting, that three of those species, all the markers that the Torah gives to identify them have to be present in the actual lulav or esrig or any of the species that you use in your set. Whereas one of them doesn't have to have all the conditions, which are the esrig has to be a pri, which means it has to be a mature fruit. The Gemara says if you use an esrig which is not yet mature, it's not called a fruit, it's called boiser in Hebrew. It can't be used as an esrig. Also has to be hodr, has to be beautiful, meaning to say it can't be dried out, has to have the condition of being beautiful. And we don't say, let's say, that the tree produces beautiful fruit. So you take a fruit which is not that beautiful. It's the species, at least. We don't say that. It has to have the conditions that the Torah describes. The same with the lulav. It's a palm, kapis, which means, the Gemara interprets that to mean that it has to be closely tied up against the center spine of the lulav. Because the nature of a lulav is that it grows, there's many, many leaves, but when they're fresh and young, they are up against the spine. As they mature, they've spread away from the spine, and that's what you see as on a palm tree, wide open leaves. That's not kosher for lulav. It has to be up against, because kapes means up against. In fact, the Ragachava says that tmarim, which means a date tree, it has to be a tree which produces currently dates, not the species which other trees of this species produce dates. The lulav from which the tree that from which your lulav comes has to produce dates. The same with the hadas, anaf eitz aves. So the Gemara says that in order for the hadas to be kosher, all three leaves have to come out on the same level. It's what we call mishuloshim, that all leaves are on the same level, and therefore that when they're up against the twig, they completely cover the twig because they're all on the same level. But if one leaf is on a different level, so that it leaves part of the twig exposed, and therefore it's not a kosher hadas. But when it comes to the arava, the willow, the Torah describes it as the willow of the alongside the stream. But a willow, the Gemara says clearly, a willow does not have to grow near the stream. If it grows in the middle of the desert or up on a mountain, it's perfectly kosher. Because nachal, the arve nachal, it means it's the species which generally grows along the stream. But your arava on your lulav does not have to come from a bush which grew along the stream. So that has to be understood. Why is it that three of the conditions have to be met for your lulav set, but on the arava it doesn't have to be met? It doesn't have to come from a stream, alongside a stream. And even if you'll answer that there is one opinion that says that there is a pasuk which says arvei, the pasuk says arvei, which means in the plural, which means there are many different types of aravas, and that includes that even if it doesn't grow near the stream, it includes also other kinds of aravas, the ones that don't grow along the stream. So that might answer why you're allowed to use it, but it doesn't answer why the Torah makes a difference about the conditions that it gave for an arava and the conditions that it gave for all the other species, which must be met, and by the arava it doesn't have to be met. And also the fact is that we learn from the word arvei, the plural of the word arvei, that there has to be two aravas. So if that's what we're using the word arve in the plural to teach us that there has to be two, then how do we know that it could be any kind of arava, even the ones that don't grow near the stream? So we're back to the question. So sometimes we find that if you learn the pasuk on the simple level, it doesn't quite answer everything. There is something left unsaid. When you study it from the perspective of one of the other approaches of Torah, like Medrash or Kabbalah or and so on, it answers fully what's going on. In this case, if we study what the Medrash says about what's the Medrashic interpretation of this mitzvah, it will answer this question as well. The Medrash says, the well-known interpretation of this mitzvah, that the four species represent four different categories of Jews. The Esrig has a pleasant aroma, also has a pleasant taste. That represents a Jew which has Torah, the pleasant taste, and also does good deeds, which is represented as pleasant aroma. The lulav, which comes from a tree which produces dates, the dates have a sweet taste, but they don't have any particular aroma which is pleasant. That represents Yitz, Jewish people that study Torah, but they don't necessarily do good deeds. The hadas has a pleasant aroma, but it doesn't have a taste. Can't eat the leaves of a hadas. So that represents Jews that have good deeds and but they don't study Torah. And then there's the arava, which has neither a good taste nor a good smell, and that is a Jew that doesn't do either, doesn't study Torah and doesn't do good deeds. And the mitzvah teaches that we have to take all four of these categories of Jews, bind them together, bring them together, make one entity out of them. Everyone has to be included into the Klal Yisrael. Nobody can be left out. So when we look at this interpretation, we see that the three species of the Esrig, the Lulav, and the Hadas, each one of them has a quality that you can identify. The quality is clear. A scholar doesn't mean somebody that once studied Torah. It means somebody that studies Torah now. There's the well-known phrase in Yiddish that a thief is not somebody that knows how to steal, it's somebody that steals. So also a lamdan, which means a scholar, is not somebody that knows how to learn, it means somebody that's learning. In other words, you have to be able to identify, it's clear that this is a scholar because you see him learning. Not that you have to be told that 20 years ago he used to learn. And obviously somebody who does good deeds has to be somebody that is doing them now, not somebody that there used to be good deeds in his life. So the three species are identified by good things that they do. The arava, why is the arava in this group? Not because of any identifiable quality, but only because deep in his soul, his core essence is Jewish. He's a descendant of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and that's why he's part of this group. But nothing you could identify, because he doesn't come from doesn't act like a Jew. He doesn't come from an environment of a Jew. But he is a Jew, and therefore he's part of this group. And that's why, by an arava, by all the other three, what brings them into the category that they are is what we see, the things that the qualities that are identified about them. So they have to have those qualities to be in that category. But the arava, since it's not about any qualities that you can see, even if he doesn't come from along the stream here represents a Jewish environment. He's a person that at least he knows where he is, who he is. No. And the arava doesn't have any identifiable qualities necessary. It's deep within his core of his soul. He is Jewish. So even if he's not from an environment where he knows that he's Jewish, even if he has no idea that he's Jewish, he's not from the stream. He's from the middle of the desert. He's still part of the group. He can still qualify to be brought into the group. And not only can he be brought into the group, but the group isn't a group until he is also included into the group. In fact, the word arava, which is the Hebrew word for the willow, means in Hebrew also pleasant, because this is what is most pleasant to Hashem is that this type of person is also included into the group. And this is, of course, the lesson of the Lulav and the Esrig, that just like you can't have a Lulav and an Esrig without the Esrig or without the Lulav, so also you can't have a Lulav and an Esrig set without the Arava. It doesn't rate as a mitzvah unless you have all four. In fact, the simplicity, meaning because a Jew that doesn't know anything expresses a certain simplicity in that being Jewish, that ties in, Chassidus tells us, to the simplicity of the essence of Hashem. The essence of Hashem is described as simple. Why is it simple? Because since nothing, it's unidentifiable in any way, so there's nothing you can point to and say, this is interesting, that's interesting, it has this quality, that quality. The simplicity of Hashem means you can't describe any of it. So the simplicity of a Jew ties in directly to the simplicity of Hashem. And it's dafka specifically through a simple Jew, which cannot be identified with any qualities, that ties into that simplicity of Hashem. The two are rooted in each other. The people that are described as a group, like the Lulav and the Esrig, they have to have the actual quality of which they identify in this group. But the Arava doesn't have to have that actual quality of growing by the stream. That's why the Torah allows it, even if it doesn't actually grow by the stream. So this is an explanation that works well according to the opinion that the Rav Chava said, that the lulav has to come from a tree that actually produces fruit, dates. But there is also an opinion that says that the actual tree that your lulav comes from doesn't have to produce dates, as long as it is the species that does commonly, generally produce dates. So then, what's the explanation? It seems that the lulav also doesn't have to have the condition that it has to have. Doesn't have to have actual dates. So now we find that according to this opinion, the lulav and the arava share the fact that they don't have to have the actual quality of with which they identify, whereas the esrig and the hadas do. So we find that then the lulav is similar to the arava in the fact that it identifies with this group more because of its essence rather than because of the quality that it used to have or which it could identify with. And this could be understood in this way. The mitzvah of the Dalet Minim is an act of a mitzvah that is meant to evoke certain important things, like the unity amongst Jewish people, or as the Zohar says, that it unites the four letters of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei of Hashem's name. So that's a pretty tall order for a mitzvah to be able to accomplish. Yet we say that how is it that this mitzvah is going to be accomplished by including a person that doesn't have any connection to the maisa of mitzvahs, the act of mitzvahs. He doesn't learn Torah, doesn't do mitzvahs, and it's only with his participation that we can actually come to accomplish this mitzvah, which has to evoke all of these important things. It would seem that it would be that a person like that would interfere with being able to accomplish this mitzvah. Yet we say no, that it's only through their participation that we can accomplish this mitzvah. So what does that teach? That his roots as a Jew, which is beyond, completely concealed, and it's not a manifest quality, is much stronger than the fact that he doesn't do what he's supposed to do. And therefore, he can be included, and it's only through him that you'll be able to get to that accomplish, or you'll be able to evoke what needs to be evoked through this mitzvah. And this idea is true for the lulav as well, because here is a Jew that is studying, that studies, and yet he doesn't do what he's supposed to do. So therefore, he's also lacking in his maisa, in the doing what he's supposed to do, and yet he is necessary for this mix as well to be able to accomplish it. So by the lulav too, it seems that the essence of the person that is the scholar supersedes and overrides the fact that he is lacking in his mitzvahs. So even though, but yet, on the other hand, even though it's true that the lulav can be included based on his essence, his core essence as a Jew, but still it needs, it's important that a lulav does act like a lulav and does study Torah and does have the qualities that he, of the group that he's part of, in order to be able to do it properly. We find a similar thing that when you give truma, truma has to be given to a kohen. Only a kohen is able to accept truma. How is a kohen, how does a kohen become a kohen? Not by anything that he does. If he's a descendant of Aaron, he's a kohen, can accept truma. Yet the Gemara says that if somebody gives truma to an ignoramus, to somebody that is not learned, it's like giving it to a lion, because they won't know what to do with it. They could abuse it, misuse it, and so on. So we see that even though the essential condition of being able to accept truma is being a kohen, just like the lulav is a Jew, but yet to be able to be the person that he needs to be in order to accept truma, he also has to be a scholar. And the same way, the lulav also has to be a Torah knowledge, even though the essence of it is to be a Ben Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov. And we look at it this way, it comes out that there is even a greater chiddush, which means there's something more novel about the fact that we allow the lulav into the group even more than the arava. The lulav is somebody who is knowledgeable and yet doesn't do what he should do. That's worse than somebody who doesn't know better, and of course he doesn't know what to do. That's more excusable than the person that knows and yet doesn't do what he wants to do, what he needs to do. And the lesson here is then, according to this opinion, that the fact that we are instructed to include the arava is not as novel as the idea that we also are instructed to include the lulav. Because there is a person who doesn't love a person that was kidnapped by the goyim, doesn't know any better. Of course you could love a person like that, but what about the guy that you know knows? And why isn't he behaving according to what he knows? That is more difficult to include into the group. So the mitzvah tells us even that person has to be included into the group as well. And by including all these groups together, it elevates the Jewish people. In fact, it even says that Hashem says that I am elevated through this. This is something that accomplishes an elevation in Hashem himself. If somebody could say that, Hashem said it. So of course it's true, and this will bring Mashiach Tzidkenu.